Hey friend, welcome back here to the Semi-Seminary. And in this episode, we're actually going to take a moment and put ourselves at the end of the last episode, No Place to Hide, there in the upper room, Jesus and his disciples. We're actually going to take a few moments and see what happens between that moment of foot washing and that moment of remembrance. What happens between then and the confrontation with Pilate? Tonight's episode, we're calling Nothing Good Happens After Midnight. And I'll see you on the other side. So in this episode, we're going to celebrate the last fleeting moments of safety that Jesus shares and enjoys for himself, for his disciples. In many ways, tonight is an end. And in many ways, it's a beginning. You might say that the events that unfold in this overnight period are a beginning of the end. A story that, at least according to the gospel account according to Mark, opens with Jesus and John on the banks of the Jordan River in a public ministry that will end tomorrow on a cross on a hill called Golgotha. Now, just a week ago, or just at the beginning of this week even, we found Jesus entering into the city of Jerusalem with throngs of people waving palms and yelling, Hosanna. They celebrate with delight that their King, Jesus of Nazareth, the Messiah, was here. The city was overflowing with excited Jews, not only exciting for the impending Passover celebration, but many of them perhaps hoping that this man, Jesus of Nazareth, a man that they had seen do miraculous things, perhaps this was the time that he would reveal himself as the Messiah. And those religious leaders that had worked so hard to silence him had been unsuccessful. And they knew that their only chance to put an end to him would somehow be to separate him from those surging crowds. And in the tumult and roar of that Palm Sunday, as the religious establishment stared out into the streets of Jerusalem, they realized that they had lost the battle, but they were not ready yet to give up the war. So here we find ourselves, still in the upper room, this safe and secure place that Jesus and his disciples had gone. A safe space that they might be able to celebrate their own Passover meal. And in the ensuing conversation that night, so much went on. So much in this evening was done and said. When we gather on Sunday mornings, we come together and we celebrate a meal. We remind ourselves that one of the things that Jesus taught that night was that he had not just come to be an and. He'd come to be an instead of. You see, when he shared that meal with his friends that night, he demonstrated them something that he'd been trying so hard to show them all along. When Jesus took the bread and told his disciples that from now on, when they break it, they'll do so in remembrance of him. And when he told them that the cup poured out was his blood, he was saying that he did not come to be an and, as in, this is how we believe as Jews, and then a teacher Jesus came along, so we continued our old traditions. No. Now he was saying, when you do these things, when you give thanks to God for your deliverance, you will now do so. You will now give thanks and remember me instead of the old ways. They, his friends, the disciples, they didn't have any way to categorize this. They had no way to fully understand what Jesus in that moment was trying to teach them. It was all just so confusing. And not only that, but Jesus seemed different. As the night wore on, it seemed Jesus became even more troubled. Something was up. If Jesus could be worried, and he seemed worried, and where's Judas? He should have been back by now. After that supper, Jesus gets up and says, "Let's leave. Let's go to the garden and pray." And they go out to the Mount of Olives, to an urban garden in Jerusalem called Gethsemane, a place that they had been many, many times before. And they went at night so they wouldn't be recognized. And Jesus tells his disciples to stay in the garden and pray. "And I'm going to go further," he says, "into the garden and pray alone." It was there where we read in Scripture of Jesus praying to his Father that if it were up to him, he would hope for another way. He says, "I would choose another route." But as always, as Luke records Jesus' words in chapter 22, verse 42, "Not my will, but yours be done." When Jesus returns to the disciples, he finds his buddies sound asleep and says to them, "Could you not stay awake and pray with me for 1 hour?" And as he was speaking, Judas shows back up. Only this time, he's not alone. With him is a small army, temple henchmen, and to the shock and to the dismay and to the horror of his disciples, Jesus surrenders to these temple guards. And they take Jesus and they arrest him. And it's at this point, Matthew records in the 26th chapter, all of the disciples deserted him and fled. But the story doesn't end there. No, the story continues. They took Jesus to see the high priest, and all of the chief priests, the scribes, the elders, they were all there. They'd all come running once they had heard what had happened, because many, many of them had never, ever had their chance up close to see for themselves this man, Jesus of Nazareth, that had caused this incredible ruckus. And there is so much detail in this part of the story. Many people often wonder, how can there be this much detail in this part of the story, given that, as we just saw, all of the followers of Jesus had fled? Well, we know from the book of Acts, right? Now, there are four Gospels that tell the life of Jesus: Matthew, Mark, Luke, John. After that, Luke wrote another book. Some say it's just the second half of Luke's Gospel, but he authored another book in our Bible that details the birth and the history of the original church. And that book is called the Acts of the Apostles. And in the book of Acts, we find that many of the Pharisees actually converted to Christianity later. And it was not because of the things Jesus said or the miracles that he performed, but because of the resurrection. And there is no doubt that much of the detail in this part of the story must have come from them. And because now, well, there's a whole lot more of them than there are them, they were emboldened. And the chief priests and the whole Sanhedrin, this would have been akin, let's say, to the Jewish Supreme Court. If you were looking for evidence against Jesus so that they might be able to declare him guilty of an offense that would have condemned him to death. This would have been as sophisticated of a court trial as you could imagine, but they couldn't find any. Many people testified against him, but even their stories didn't line up because they were testifying falsely. And as if to amp up the tension in the room, every time that they would ask Jesus a question, he would refuse to answer. Well, finally, the chief priest stood up and said, "Enough." And he asked Jesus the question that was at the heart of the matter. He looked at Jesus and he asked him, "Are you or are you not?" Mark chapter 14 says, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" And with Jesus' answer in that moment, he held his future, he held your future, my future, the future of the whole world. And he turned to the chief priest and looked at the men in the room whose motives were anything but pure. And he said in Mark, "I am." And with that, the chief priests became deranged, blind with rage. They tore their clothes in disgust as a sign of lamentation. And they found Jesus worthy of death, and they blindfolded him. And they spit on him, and they punched him in the face, screaming at him, "Prophesy, prophesy." And the guards took him away, and they beat him. It was early the next morning where these chief priests and these Sanhedrin, they conspired through the night to come up with a plan to put Jesus to death. You see, although they had determined him to be guilty, they still needed Rome to carry out the sentence. The plan was simple. They just needed to figure out some way to convince Pilate that it would be in Pilate's best interest to condemn Jesus that very day, before the Passover was complete. Why? So that they could all get back down to business. The city would settle down, and eventually the city would empty out. And things could return to normal, the status quo, the way things had always been. So they bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. Now, Pilate had been the governor of Judea in the province of Samaria for about 7 years. And Pilate could not stand the Jewish people. And he loved to antagonize them and to remind them of Rome's control over them, that they were, in fact, in reality, subjects of the Roman Empire. And he didn't even live in Jerusalem. He only came into the city during religious festivals to keep peace. So now, early the next morning, text tells us that they brought Jesus before Pilate, and he asked them, "What are the charges against this man?" And the priest reply in John chapter 18, saying, "If he were not a criminal, we would not have handed him over to you." Translation: let's not get bogged down in any details. "Pilate, we just need a favor. We have been through this with you before. You know that we wouldn't bring him here if it wasn't important. You know that we really would not bring him here on the eve of Passover if this was not super important. So let's not go into the details, Pilate. We need a favor." And Pilate loved it when the Jewish people needed a favor. He loved it when they groveled before him. So in John chapter 18, he eggs them on. Next verse, chapter 18, verse 31. "Well then, take him yourselves and judge him by your own law. He wanted them to beg. He wanted for them to acknowledge Rome's sovereignty over them. So they sighed, because everybody already knew the answer. Everybody already understood the scenario. And they looked up at him. Next, verse 32 of 18 John. But we have no right to execute anyone. Ah. It was music to Pilate's ears. Oh, that's right. You have no power to enforce your own laws. What a pity. And then Pilate did something that none of them expected him to do. He insisted that they bring Jesus inside to be questioned. And he asked Jesus, "Are you the king of the Jews?" And outside, the religious leaders are going crazy. They're so afraid that if Pilate is one-on-one with Jesus, Jesus will do his Jesus magic. He swayed the crowd. He won the nation. There's no telling what he might do with Pilate. What would happen over these next few hours would involve a horrific series of events that would eventually lead to Jesus being crucified on a cross. As I said, in these overnight hours between Maundy Thursday and Good Friday, we see the beginning of the end. But what transpires tomorrow will be the end of the beginning. But again, for now, we're safe here in this upper room, gathered around the table with our friend Jesus, listening in our hearts to what he has to teach us and prepare us for what is to come when we leave this place. As I had mentioned in the episode before, the No Place to Hide episode, the one in which we actually discussed Maundy Thursday, I had mentioned that this is the point that is so difficult. These next few moments in the story are so difficult for us to embrace. But if we do not fully embrace humanity's sinfulness and its infinite capability for violence, then we can't truly understand the magnitude of the sacrifice that we're going to see with Jesus on the cross. We must sit and absorb in these moments of regret and violence, and the choice of personal satisfaction and desire over God's justice. Because in these last few moments of Jesus' life, that is exactly what we're confronted with. And it's not something that we must run away from. It's something that we must embrace, because then and only then can we truly experience and understand the value of Christ's sacrifice on that cross. Something to think about. Hey, we'll be back tomorrow with the next installment of the story. We're going to give an opportunity to hear our Good Friday homily. We're going to pick up the story right where you live off, right here. And then on Sunday, we're going to celebrate the resurrection. Till then, friend, be blessed.